Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. We're joined by today 24/7 sports reporter Sean Bach. Sean, I want to start off the pod first off by saying congrats on 10K.
Yeah, thank you.
10K? Damn.
Yeah, I don't know if I can consider it 10K though, because like Dave gave me a shout out.
Yeah, like, he was campaigning for you a little.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's. I don't know if I'm going to count it, but maybe once we hit 10.1, I'll be like, okay, then it's 10K.
What's your Instagram at?
Only like 1,000. I mean, I don't care about Instagram.
Yeah, he doesn't put the work in for Instagram.
No.
Put the work in.
Even Twitter, I feel like I don't put the work in.
All right, I'm going to stop you there. Like, if anybody does follow Sean, you know, like, He tweets like a robot when he has to get something out, and there's a lot of what you get out. Like, I don't want to hear that shit.
Right. But I'm saying there's other people that tweet to, like,
to blow
cater
up.
Cater to their audience.
I guess. I mean, you cater to your audience, but it's your job. You do your job.
Right. But some people believe that their voice is bigger than what they really do.
It's someone like that. Yeah, someone like me.
No. All
right.
No. Sometimes. No. Dude, I don't know.
Well, all right. Speaking about, you know, tweeting about what you do, there's been some big commits this summer to Iowa football. So I was kind of wondering, you know, there's, you know, obviously the big one, Proctor, you know, Marco Lanes has been committed. Kendrick Raphael, Naples running back, you know, he's committed, going to be the best running back in Hawkeye history, calling it right now. And then Trevor Locke, what have you seen Proctor's commit do to Iowa football in the recruiting process for other people who are still in the midst of making decisions?
I mean, with his decision, I think it's gonna have more of an impact on future classes. I mean, it could be like 2023 or 2022, where like Xavier Wampler committing really had a domino effect with a couple of defensive backs in that class. Because I mean, if you remember, there were a lot of people freaking out about defensive back recruiting at this time last year because Iowa really didn't have any commits at that position. And I know you talk about the Phil Parker special too, but at that point you were, I mean, obviously Iowa was in on Xavier Wampler, but that momentum really didn't pick up till October. And then you have a couple other, then you start like seeing these other targets emerge. Phil Parker kind of hones in on these guys and they end up signing their best secondary class in the last couple of years. And where I was kind of going with that was Wampler committed on December 8th. And then you had TJ Hall, Conan Edinger, Orlando Trader, who's no longer with the program, and then Deshaun Lee all commit. I mean, the first three guys I mentioned committed within like a week after Wampler because he went on an unofficial visit with them. And, you know, they all committed right before National Signing Day. So, and I think having Wampler in the class really aided, you know, some of those decisions, like especially Cone's. You know, with Proctor, I don't know if it's going to have that similar impact, maybe depending on who they kind of, you know, get their eyes on early in the fall. But I think it'll have more, especially Xavier. I mean, I think it'll have more of an impact in future classes because a couple weeks ago, there were two four-star defensive ends who happened to be twins in the 2024 class, Jared and Jacob Smith, who have offers from like Alabama, Kentucky. I think Notre Dame has offered too. But Iowa's right up there because of that, you know, Xavier Wampler factor, not just because it's Xavier that's there, but because they see that Iowa's getting some of these guys that, you know, are like them, you know, highly ranked guys. And I think one of the things too is like when you have a guy like that, you know, really recruiting you, I mean, Xavier is playing a role as a recruiter with these kids too. And, you know, that's having a really big impact on them going forward. And, you know, I think Caden could have that similar impact too. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's the names, but I think it's more the personality that really goes into it too with recruiting some of these guys and having that impact. Like if you have players that, or if you're a highly ranked guy, like say Xavier Wampler is just like the biggest, like just asshole ever, even though he's not, you know, that would have a negative impact, even if he's a five-star guy. But I think Iowa does a really good job with, you know, yeah, they want to recruit that top talent, but they're also getting top talents that, you know, work well with the program. And I know that's kind of a status quo with Iowa, a really big cliche, but, you know, they're getting guys that just seem to be the right fit personality-wise too, along with that talent. And I think that's really important too.
Yeah, they're, sure. I was just going to say, like, they're definitely – it has always felt like they look at the high-character players maybe more so than, like, who is the best on the field, because – I think there is still that feeling of, like, in Iowa culture, at least, like, culture plays anywhere you go. And, like, if you have a strong culture and a team that's bought all the way in and there's no, like, individuals, you can go a long way. And, I mean, Iowa, I mean, they got far last season. Who knows what this season looks like? I mean, I heard that the kickers couldn't make a kick from the right hash in spring football. So that's always a problem that, you know, I have to think about when I go home at night, because Iowa scores points with field goals. And so maybe the kickers need some better character, Sean. I don't know if you can speak to that, but do you know anything about the kickers? Anything about what's going on in that situation? Cause I heard that they can't make a right hash kick. And that's,
well, yeah, that was the case at the open practice. There was not a lot of consistency with field goal kicking. I think it was also one of the first times that they kicked in Kinnick. And if you recall that day, it was pretty windy too. And I mean, I know that's no excuse because it's going to be windy and cold in Kinnick in November and October. But I think right now they're saying it's pretty even. I actually had someone text me that the other day saying that it seems to be pretty even, but incoming freshmen or, you know, true freshmen, Drew Stevens seems to be the guy that's really taking on the spot right now. He's at least performed the best. Cause he was, I mean, I know kicker ratings are a little different than, you know, the stuff that we do, but Stevens was a five-star guy in Cole's kicking, and, you know, he had offers from, I mean, I think South Carolina offered him a PWO. There were a number of Power Five schools that wanted to offer him a full ride, or that offered him a full ride scholarship, but they never tweeted about it. You know, they never, you know, really considered those because they just wanted to be at Iowa. And, you know, I think Stevens, I think he's the guy right now, but the coaches have said too, they're not going to name a starter until the end of fall camp. But the way that Drew Stevens has been performing, it seems likely that he'll be the guy at this point, but you never really know.
Then offensively, what have you heard about changes that are going to be made going to this season? You know, is Petrus coming in number one? Is there an open competition at all? What are things looking like there?
It's going to be Petrus. I don't have a doubt of that. I think the offense, there were some comments and I heard about it the other day. It was a couple weeks ago, I got a text, which I really didn't fully, like, grasp, but someone just texted me, like, someone that I know and trust was just like, hey, like, the offense we've heard of has been, like, really simplified. And I was kind of like, what does that mean? So there were some comments, I think, you know, the other day. Well, Jack, you're the football mind here. When you talk about a simplified offense, what do you think goes into that?
Well, the only thing, like, I actually was having this talk with one of my buddies that's coaching, and I said, like, he didn't like how they were teaching power and they, how, like, the steps or maybe having a tight end, like, being responsible for the end man. But at the end of the day, like, when you run inside zone, when you run power, blast, any sort of scheme, whether it's a passing scheme, like, I don't really know a lot of those, drive, whatever, there's only so many different ways to, like, skin a cat. Inside zone is inside zone. You know, it's like if they simplify it and don't make it so complex, so maybe there's not so many responsibilities or different aiming points or adjustments or the ability to make certain adjustments and just run with what they have. Maybe, but maybe they had this feeling where either the quarterback or other people on the field were just thinking too much. And in football, like, you can't think. And when you want something to be simplified, that means you just want them to grasp it and go. And I don't think Iowa's scheme, like what they do, is necessarily like complicated when you watch it. Like they add wrinkles that make sense by a game by game basis, but they run like 60-70% of the time. They run between the tackles. They like an outside zone. They like to open it up with a play action down the middle, and they like to run comebacks on the outside. That's fucking Iowa football. Like there's nothing other than that I know. So simplified, maybe it's just easier for the quarterbacks where they aren't running as complex schemes. Maybe there's no like, I would love to see the day where Iowa runs like an RPO, but I don't know if that'll ever happen because that's not simplifying it, but that's like where football's going. So I just kind of fear when I hear simplified, it's like, are they dumbing it down too much because they feel like they can't grasp it? Or is this just them trying to say, look, you can only run an inside zone like so many different ways. It's literally, you can't reinvent the wheel. You can take your zone steps and everybody does it the same way. It's like putting on your shoes. So if Brian Ferentz simplifies it like that, maybe, but like how much more simplified can the Iowa offense be is kind of where my thought is.
Yeah. That's kind of what I said too. I think I'm going to dive into a little bit more in the next couple of days or weeks, but I mean, you mentioned the RPO stuff. I think Iowa's starting to recruit the type of quarterback that could fit in with that sort of stuff. I mean, I think with Joey Labus, there's potential to do RPO stuff. I think with Carson May, though he's a little bigger, I think there's potential for it. I mean, Marco Linus, I think that's, you know, definitely, he's perfect for that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, Peterson, I mean, even Padilla, but Petrus, I mean, that's not his strong suit. I mean, the coaching staff knows that. They're not going to try and make him, you know, different from what he is. But yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see what, because I mean, you watch the offense and, you know, I know like so many things have to go right for Iowa to like, or for like a play to be successful. And I think when you have a quarterback with physical or limited physical abilities, I think that, you know, kind of handicaps you a little bit. But I think with Iowa too, like how many times last year were you like this, like, why can't we do this every time? Like in a certain pass play or something like that. And I mean, it's true. Like you just watch the offense and you're like, you know, they make it look so much harder than it has to be. Like watching, you know, other teams in college football on offense was just like mind blowing.
Well, that's how it was as like a Bears fan, you know, it was gross how similar it felt last year, especially out of all of the years I've been a fan. Really, they were,
you're right.
They were the exact same in terms of like, fuck, they make playing offense look hard. Like they just make it look hard. And offense is like probably the easiest part of football because the defense has to react to you. And they still made it look hard. But like you make the point with like having a quarterback like Petrus, and it does like bottleneck you in a sense where, you know, you can't really move him around. And we've seen Petrus when he's under pressure moving and it looks like he's pressing all of the buttons at once. And they want to try and like minimize that because it's bad. And they want to keep him in the pocket, roll him out, maybe do that like throwback that they did the Reganey at Penn State. Like they have certain things that work for him, but it's hard when he's just, there's not a lot like he can do mobility wise. So he's kind of stuck in between the tackles. And you saw with the Michigan game, I think more than any, our offensive line is really young. They were young. And I think being able to like grow together, losing Linderbaum hurts a fuck ton, but still being able to grow together and have that last year, those experiences of like they were okay, but they were blitzed and punched in the mouth a ton. And that Michigan game really exposed, I think, to Iowa fans and the nation, like, yeah, this Iowa offense wasn't a fluke. Like they are that bad because the offensive line, I don't think, could get any sort of like consistent moving of the line of scrimmage. They just got beat, you know, like it, whether it was the right tackle or the left tackle getting beat around. It happened at such a rapid rate that you were like, this offensive line, just, you can't do anything when the O-line's bad. It's impossible to play football when the O-line, you have to control the line. And they didn't. And hopefully, you know, having a year of those experiences allows them to do it. Cause I think a lot of like what people got on Petras and Padilla for maybe making wrong decisions or doing something where they shouldn't have. Sometimes that could be in the back of their mind where they know like the offensive line can't necessarily hold on this certain protection, or he knows that the defense is in something that'll just get there quicker. That's sometimes just how it works in football. You need all 11 to work, and it's so hard. And they made it look as hard as hard's ever looked last year. They can only go up. They can only go up. And
hopefully
is exactly what I was going to say. Hopefully.
And so, Sean, with that, then going into fall camp as that approaches, what are you kind of keeping an eye on? What are the top like 2-3 things that you're kind of monitoring going into fall camp and what you're hoping to see coming out of fall camp?
I mean, obviously quarterback play, but I kind of try to avoid that like at all costs, just talking about it, because at this point it's always going to be the case. Running backs, I think with Gavin and LaShawn Williams, I know there's a lot of excitement about those two. I'm interested to see who that number three guy is too. You know, since covering Iowa, like I've been so enamored with backups, and like that's become like such an one sec guys, let me close this window real quick.
Love the shirt.
Thank you. It's huge on me. That has become like such a big like part of Iowa football, or at least like me covering it, because you know Iowa's the type of like program that has, you know, by like their positions by committee, like running backs by committee. Like that's what Iowa is, and I think there's potential for Iowa this year. You know, I think Gavin Williams is the lead guy, but I don't think he's like the game breaker type guy that you can consistently have at the starting spot. Or at least, you know, getting like a ton of carries. Like LaShawn Williams, I think there's potential for him to, you know, potentially be that number one guy, but you know, they're going to work 1-2 with each other. And then there's that third spot where, you know, it could be interesting. I think Caleb Johnson, incoming freshman, could be, you know, a candidate to take over that third spot. You know, Devin Hilson is a guy that they're really excited about. So, I'm intrigued to see where that kind of goes. And wide receiver position, I mean, if Brody Brecht can emerge as the main X receiver, I think that could be a game changer for this offense. We'll go to defense, because I mean, I think tight end and offensive line kind of speak for himself. I mean, tight end, you know what you're going to get with Sam LaPorta. Luke Lachey, you know, he needs to take that next leap. Steven Silianos, the transfer they got from Lafayette. You know, they got, I mean, it was kind of a surprise. You know, a lot of people were expecting Iowa to go maybe on the offensive line for another addition, or, you know, a wide receiver, or even quarterback. You know, they kind of kicked the tires with a couple quarterbacks, but nothing really seemed to,
like who?
You know, come to fruition. I heard one of them was Connor Bazelak, who went to Indiana.
Tony Raz guy.
Is it? That's right. Yeah. That he is. Trying to think who else. That was the only one I really heard, because they recruited Bazelak out of high school. So I think there was a previous relationship there. But I mean, tight end, they're going to try and run more 13 personnel in the offense this year with three tight ends. Offensive line, I mean, Logan Jones at center. Wait. I think that's going to be intriguing.
Did you say they're going to try and run more 13 personnel with three?
They might run three tight ends.
Like,
this year.
What the fuck do we mean we're going to try to run more of it? It's Iowa. Like, that's like we do it all the fucking time as is.
Three tight ends?
Yeah.
Three.
Please. I mean, Brian Ferentz was in New England. You throw on a third on the field. I mean, they had two wide receiver tight ends. He's enamored with that idea of just throwing as many tight ends on the field, because if your tight ends are better athletes than their entire defense, they can't tackle you and they're faster and they're bigger. And it's like, well, people who like love tight ends, I think love them more than any other position by a landslide. And I think that's Brian Ferentz, and you see it at Iowa. I mean, he loves his tight ends.
But I don't think, I mean, the thing with getting Stylianos too, is I think it's going to be big for run support. I think that's a really big reason why. Cause I mean, Luke Lachey is not a blocking tight end. Like,
no,
he should, he needs to be improved in that area. Like he showed considerable like improvements, but he's known for his receiving tight end. Like there's no doubt about it. That's why he got recruited to go to Iowa. And Sam LaPorta, while I think he's improved in run, I mean, he was initially just like a blocking, like inline type guy, but he's like a guy that you want, you know, getting first downs for you. While Steven Stylianos can go out and be a receiver, but, you know, I think they got him more for run support. And, you know, because, I mean, the stats show at Lafayette how much better they were as a team running the football when Stylianos was on the field. So that's going to be – I think that's going to be notable. Mention the center spot. That was more than three, but I think defense, you know, Terry Roberts or Jamari Harris, who's going to be the second cornerback with Riley Moss. You know, how much do we see Xavier Wampa this year? Mm-hmm. I think Cooper DeJean's the cash. The defensive line and linebackers, I think those two spots will be really solid. I'm really excited to see what Lucas Van Ness can do if he, you know, switches to end full time.
He's gotten huge over the last two years.
He's
massive.
I did like Same. Watching him last year. He played like a game wrecker a lot. You know, he just had a presence on the field all of the time, where that was how like it felt when Van Valkenburg first started at Iowa, first started playing there. And then, I mean, he kind of dissipated off, but like he has that game wreck where anywhere he goes, he can just penetrate and just fuck something up. And put him at end, opposite of Wagner, or even opposite of like Joe, he's a fucking demon. I think he needs to play more. I think he's the one that needs to play more.
Well, yeah, because I mean, him and Joe Evans were tied for they had the most sacks on the team last year, and Van Ness played like almost, I think, less than half.
Yeah,
snaps that Van Valkenburg played last year, and Van Valkenburg had 3.5 sacks.
Yeah, you just see those videos, like Sam said, of like you see Van Ness in the weight room. He looks like fucking Hercules. Legit looks like a Hercules figure. So I think you need someone like him to play more. One name that I liked on the D-line, though, big boy, Yaya Black. I think he needs to play more because I thought that they were getting pushed around a little inside. And I like Noah Shannon, but he's not exactly the biggest big interior guy. You know, like he's an undersized nose. So I think one of Iowa's problems that I felt last year was, even you see it in the Michigan game, like they got pushed around a little. They can hang. They got pushed around a little in terms of just mass and I think strength. So
yeah, but I think also a big part of it was the offense couldn't stay on the field.
No, that's a good point. You know, the fatigue definitely. And the other thing people don't realize, like especially when a defense has like a long drive, or and then they make a turnover, they score it, pick six, fumble, they have to go right back on the field and like do it again, you know. And that's the offense is the one that gets to rest, and then they go out and they look insanely stupid in like three plays, and they give it back to the defense. Like I PTSD right now.
Besides the Ohio State game that obviously every Iowa fan has circled on their calendar, what are the three that you kind of are excited to see this team play in next year, Sean?
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan will be fun in Kinnick. That'll probably be the big recruiting weekend. Yeah, that'll probably be the big recruiting weekend too.
Special uniforms this year?
I don't know. I would imagine so. I don't know which ones though. That'd be kind of cool. Because, I mean, I think my favorite alternate jerseys, I got this question yesterday in a mailbag that I did. That I still have to tweet. I haven't tweeted that out yet.
Got an exclusive, Jack.
Well, I mean, it's already up on the site. So I think I said the 2017 blackout ones for the Ohio State game. Yeah. I think those ones were my favorite.
Yeah.
I wasn't huge on the yellows, like all yellows.
No, I like the all yellows. I liked where their minds were at. And I liked how they played off of like the older ones that had like that kind of look, but it was just the opposite. When they did the yellow. So I kind of liked it. And I liked it when like, I mean, they had the receivers to make it look good, like Brandon Smith and Mir, like they looked hot in the yellows. They looked like fast, strong. They looked good. I thought those blacks, if that was a sunny game when they played Ohio State, if they were wearing those blacks and the sun was out, they lose, I think, by like 30. But the fact that it was cloudy and shitty and they had those blacks on, I think it just fit the mood perfectly for like walking into your funeral in Kinnick, and just within 5 minutes, Urban Meyer had a stroke on the sideline. It was awesome. Those jerseys. I mean, I think a lot of Iowa fans, they'll have that like feeling where like they remember those jerseys, but then they also remember like the first 5-10 minutes and they're like, fuck, like we pumped Ohio State within 10 minutes. You know, it was just like, we knew. that jersey has that feeling. I don't know if they should ever bring it back out until this Ohio State game, maybe, but nah, probably not.
If Iowa loses this year to Ohio State, like, it's just absolutely pummeled. Like, do people stop talking about the 2017 game?
I think
no, because it's Urban Meyer.
I agree with Sam. That is true. I agree with Sam, but I also think that that's a learning experience for every person who watches football with that 2017 game, where if that happens in a game where you throw a pick six and you're down that early on the road in an environment, it's over. Like, you literally, it takes so many things to go right for you to get, and it's just over at that moment. Like, that's, there's no getting out of that hell for the next 2.5 hours. And they didn't, you know, and you even saw it when they went to Ohio State, went to Purdue. I mean,
yeah, and that's, they Purdue
probably played the worst game that they ever could have played, but they walked into a place at night that didn't want Ohio State there, and it was hell, and they looked like hell. Yeah,
but it also helps that most of the guys who, or almost all of them, if not every single one of them, who played in that game aren't on the team anymore, so there isn't going to be a, oh, we pummeled Ohio State last
time. Yeah, it's a completely different Ohio State now. It's a completely different one than that 2017. I actually think this Ryan Day one is freaking – which one would you say is better, Ohio State's or Urban – with Urban Meyer, or Ohio State with Ryan Day? Urban. I think you give Ryan a couple more years, I think he's still – I think he's got a better program.
I think it's a healthier program.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that they have, like, it's not as toxic, and I don't think you'll see as many Iowa-Purdue games, you know, with Ryan Day. I don't. Yeah. I think Urban Meyer is just so stubborn sometimes, and then he'd have, like, a stroke and just, like, brain freeze on the field. I mean, well, he makes up, like, freaking health issues just to get out of a job. Like, the guy's such a phony.
Well, speaking of Purdue, that's the game I'm most worried about for this year. Like, Ohio State, I'm worried about it, but it's like, okay. Like, if we lose to them, we can take it. Purdue with two of our own wide receivers playing against us is like a little.
Well, the question becomes, how many quarterbacks will Purdue use this year? Because the game plan shows three works against Iowa. If you play three quarterbacks, you'll beat the shit out of us.
Dude, I saw – there was a thing I saw the other day. I can't remember who posted or how much credibility it was, but someone was saying that – I mean – okay, no, that's something different. I think, what was it? Was it PFF that said that they had Aidan O'Connell as the number two quarterback in the Big Ten coming into this year? Okay. That's just wild.
So let's talk through it right here. So number one is CJ Stroud, bar none. Number two, Aidan O'Connell.
Maybe based on last year. Michigan is Iowa. Michigan is Iowa, but more dynamic with their offense. Like, they don't really need the quarterback to do much. I mean, Graham Mertz should be up there, but he's had one of the most underwhelming
careers. I was about to say him too. He is, like, he was such a flash in the pan. Like, his first game, and then he got COVID. And then it just kind of, literally, he had like 5 touchdowns, COVID. And, like, that was the end of the Graham Mertz hype.
because he was electric, like, coming out of high school and stuff.
Before last season, I would say, like, Penix from Indiana would probably even be up there. But still.
He's gone.
I know. And that's where it's, like, the Big Ten just.
Casey Thompson, the new Nebraska QB.
True.
Out of Texas.
He was a big name.
Yeah, he is. But I think
he's
going to be playing by the start of the year.
You know, PFF might be on something there with Aidan O'Connell. I mean, he looked good. Not great, but, like, when has a Big Ten quarterback ever looked, like, great and he's not a dual threat? You know, like, they just sit in the pocket, throw the ball, hand the ball off. But, like, Purdue, I mean, he has so coach's name, Jeff Brohm?
Yeah, Brohm.
He's former quarterback. They run the air raid. I am scared for that game, truly. But I'm also happy that,
a PTSD from last year.
I mean, I'm happy and I'm proud of the career he had as a Hawkeye, but I'm happy Matt Hankins won't be there, because I think that Purdue game broke him as a player, and David Bell just snapped his confidence in half. And that, we can't have that on the field. He was getting turned around every
week. Well, he had injuries and stuff.
Yeah. He was playing hurt. It was not good. Not good at all. But that exposed the shit out of Iowa. That was that game, I actually think is probably, I think that was a harder watch than the Michigan game. Because I think the Michigan game, every Iowa fan knew this is going to be a rock fight. We just can't go down. We can't, and we did. Like, we literally went down as fast as we could. Purdue, we were like number two, and it was like, hey, we let's keep rolling.
Well, what's scary about this Purdue game too is just thinking about Tracy and Jones being the starting wide receivers, and if they just tear us apart like how Purdue did last year, it would just be absolutely humiliating for Iowa football.
And you know, Iowa football loves to, you know, fourth and three, and we're on the 50. We're not going to go for it. We're going to punt it and pin it. And you know, Charlie Jones is addicted to trouble, and he'll pick up that ball and take it for 30.
So I actually want to ask Sean about that. So what's the punt returner, kick returner competition looking like? Is it going to be a guy like Nico? Is it going to be a young guy? Like, what's it looking like?
If I had to give three guys right now that I would look for,
Arlen?
I think Arlen Bruce, Cooper DeJean, and Caden Wetgen, if that's how you say his name, who is a fresh, or it's a walk, he's a walk-on from Iowa Western.
I love that.
Definitely going to be the guy. Watch his huddle, because, I mean, he didn't get a ton of touch. He was pretty good in this open spring practice, but you watch his huddle at Iowa Western. Like, once he, like, gets past the defense, like, splits the defense, like, he is just gone. Like, it's – he is so dang fast. It's ridiculous. He went to Iowa Western for a year. He's from Williamsburg. Yep. I think Iowa tried to offer him a PWO out of high school, but I think he was trying to get a full ride somewhere, and it just, like, didn't end up working. And then he's kind of like, oh, well, I guess I'll just walk down at Iowa. The coaching staff actually called him the next Charlie Jones, like, when he, you know, committed to Iowa. So, obviously, that was before Jones left. But so, I don't know. I think Caden, he's just got to work. He can't muff anything. Like, he's kind of a daredevil, like, you know,
he's addicted to the trouble. Like, he loves just pushing that fine line. I love that, but I hate it.
Charlie was a little more in control with it.
Yeah.
And I think too, with like that Purdue and, you know, with Tyrone and Charlie, it's like those marriages with Iowa, like, didn't end well either. I mean, I know, like, obviously Tyrone came back to Iowa during the spring game, but that was more so for, like, you know, his teammates. Like, I don't think it was a really good, it wasn't a really good split. I mean, you saw, like, Tyrone tweeting stuff during the year. You saw his family tweet stuff during the year. Like, that was negative. And, you know, obviously it kind of – the writing was on the wall for a little while. And then, obviously, the Charlie Jones stuff, like, that caught a lot of people out of the blue. And, you know, I think some of the comments, too, that some of the players made were pretty eye-opening with how that situation ended. And, you know, as it's been phrased to me, it's like, Jeff Brohm and Kirk Behrens, like, aren't going to dinner with each other anytime soon. Like, they are not each other's biggest fans at this point, especially Kirk of Brohm. So
no, I envision Brohm as the new kid on the block, and he's attacking the Big Ten in a different way. And he's taken talent from Kirk. He's beat Kirk in Kirk's house. He's been a thorn in Kirk's side ever since he's really been there. I think that's like a weirdly like middle level rivalry now.
Like, yeah, weirdly. Well, this year is going to be, I'm curious to see how Hawks fans travel to Purdue this year for that game, because it's going to be a big game for Iowa fans.
My thing is, like, how much do Purdue football fans know about, like, the beef with Iowa?
Yeah, that's why I call it like a middle level rivalry, because it's like, how much do Purdue fans like even care? You know, it's like they have basketball. They had Jaden Ivey and Edie, and Edie's going to be on the Globetrotters in a couple months. They'll hang their hats on that. You know, and they were underwhelming in basketball, but football, I mean, they overachieve. I feel like they go into the season like, we'll see, and then Purdue comes in and they win like seven games, and they're just a thorn. I think that's who they are now. But hold on. I want to bring it up because we are talking Purdue, Big Ten. There is, like, we talked about it last episode, Sam, but with the whole college football realignment, I want to get Sean's take on, like, the idea, or like what your thought is of, like, Notre Dame's place in all of this. Right. And because Notre Dame and Purdue's got like a legit rivalry. And like to have that back, I think would be.
And if fun. Notre Dame joins the Big Ten, we're becoming a Notre Dame podcast.
I'm definitely. Right now. We'll definitely be a casual like follower of Notre Dame. Like you have to be. It's almost a prerequisite if you're from the suburbs of Chicago, is you have to check in on Notre Dame and see what's up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's too, because you get NBC and, you know, they have the big TV contract with them. But, you know, I think with Notre Dame, my thing is like they can afford to wait as long as possible because of the football program and because of, you know, I mean, those rivalries, like how many, like when you talk about Notre Dame, do you consider Notre Dame USC a rivalry? Yes. Notre Dame Purdue. Like I don't think people get up for that.
It was before our time though. It was before
that's
us.
True. That's true.
That's I true. Think where we won't, but like certain, I think the college football fans that are on edge for this realignment and some of the NIL to see something like that maybe come back. Like it's a concession where it's like, this is okay. Like we could get behind that. It's still an Indiana battle.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't even realize that like Notre Dame's in Indiana too. I think a lot of people think that Notre Dame is like its own like entity.
It's like the Vatican. It's just like
no, literally. That's how some people I think really see it.
Mm-hmm. Like it took me a while to realize that.
Like the way that Notre Dame alums talk about Notre Dame, they make it sound like it's just its own mecca.
Well,
like,
no, and even
when they talk about South Bend, it's
when I visited there, dude, you can walk around South Bend, open container, cops will look at you and they'll just like give you the nod, like go Irish. Like it's like a fucking mecca for those people. And if you're not from Notre Dame, you're not an alum, you're not a student, they look at you like you're a pariah. They don't want to talk to you anymore. Like you're not one of them. It's a weird cult. It's definitely a weird cult that like
and people are interesting because there's so many Notre Dame fans who obviously didn't ever go to Notre Dame because it's such a small school relative for a big college football program. It's really interesting to me the dynamic of the diehard Notre Dame fans who have no real ties to Notre Dame and then the people that actually went to Notre Dame. It's like so interesting.
Yeah.
When you intersect with those two groups of fans.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, too, the other day. I saw a tweet where it's like, obviously Notre Dame is one of these schools, but, like, which schools are the ones that, like, have the biggest fan base or biggest, like, you know, amount of fans that, like, don't go there or, like, didn't go there, like, for school and stuff?
I'd say another one would be, especially in Florida, is Miami.
Yeah.
Like, when Miami had the national – like, I know so many people here who are Miami fans who have no ties to the U. I'd say USC is another one too.
Yeah, I would too, just because like and I would even tie it to like
and Ohio State I'd say is probably the biggest.
Ohio State is a gigantic one for sure. I mean, I have friends that my dad's from Ohio, and so I'm an Ohio State fan. Like, okay. The one I remember, like when Tebow was around, people were just Gator fans because
really? Up in Chicago.
Oh yeah. Oh, and even in Iowa, people it was Tebow. It was Tebow mania everywhere. Like people thought Tim Tebow was the greatest college football player ever when he was playing. And granted, it felt like he was. And then Cam Newton.
I bought into the hype.
I did too. And then Cam Newton came out of nowhere, and people were like, well,
Cam
that's
was his backup.
Fucking unbelievable. Exactly. And that's when people realized maybe we bought in a little too early on this Tebow guy, you know? I think Notre Dame, USC, and Ohio State are like the big ones. And I think like recently there's a lot of just casual football fans that are like, oh, I'm a fan of Alabama because I like to watch people win and like success and Saban, you know, people say that. Yeah. It's just people love or hate Alabama and they love the success because who doesn't love like that type of success? So I'd say those are like the four big ones. But one that I think is like weirdly big that is just dying, but it could be so much bigger, is Nebraska. Like they're such a bigger, I think, national brand than even Iowa. And they're just so dead right now. Like there's just no excitement for Nebraska. Scott Frost, how many more years does he have left to like turn that ship around? One, two? I don't even know.
I think he has as long as he wants.
Dude, that's what scary. It feels like. Oh, that's scary for them because it hasn't looked any better.
But switching from college sports real quick, today we got the MLB draft, home run derby.
Oh, geez.
To get some baseball talk.
Wait, is the home run derby today?
Yeah, or Ooh. Tomorrow. It's tomorrow.
I'm going to bet on that.
So there's Schwarber, Albert Pujols, Corey Seager, Juan Soto. I forgot who else is in it. There's a few other guys.
All right, so I have the list. So Schwarber's facing Pujols in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck? This matchup right here is insane. Juan Soto against Jose Ramirez.
Yeah.
I have no idea who wins that. Pete Alonso against Acuña. I'll take Alonso any day of the week. Best home run derby hitter, like, ever.
I have Schwarbs winning.
Corey Seager against Julio Rodriguez. I don't even know in that. I like Corey Seager because lefties, I feel like, just hit better home runs. It's just a weird, like, it just aesthetically.
Really?
I just feel like it, aesthetically, lefties hitting home runs just, like, they go farther and harder, and stadiums are better for lefties to hit home runs. I don't know.
I'm a lefty, but I like the camera angle more of righties, like, doing it. I don't know why.
They have their, like, watching a righty tank one to left, like Vladdy just unload 470.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't get old. But the one that I've always, like, there's two names that I just have in my brain from the home run derby that I can't, like, forget. It's Prince Fielder, watching him put his entire, like, 280 pounds into a baseball.
Dude, and he's more than 280 pounds.
310 pounds into a baseball. And then Josh Hamilton. When he was like,
well, that's classic.
That was iconic, right?
Absolutely. But lefty, beautiful, hits the shit out of the ball.
You have a real affinity for lefties now that I think about it. Because a few pods ago, you were talking about the lefty jump shot and how it's just.
There's something about lefties in sports that I need to figure. We need to have Ricky Stanzi back on and talk Gota and figure out if lefties have like a bodily like advantage in terms of like rotations or something. They have to. I don't get it. It's lefties in baseball too. It's funny, Sean, we're talking about lefties. Something the White Sox need in their lineup is a lefty.
Right.
But we can talk about that in a couple minutes, but home run derby. I like
Schwarbs or Albert to win it.
So Albert's got one of the eight when pigs fly chance, he'll be tired after four swings. I'm looking at the bracket right now. I think the winner of Juan Soto, Jose Ramirez, has a chance to win it all. But they have to beat Schwarber, and that's a tough ask.
He's going to hit at least 23 first round.
I think Pete Alonso is a sure shot for the finals, and I think it's between Schwarber, Soto, or Ramirez. And
I don't think Pete's going to make it far, even though he's the two-time champ. Because usually, like, after a while, those guys who win it at least once or twice, they usually lose in like the first round.
Yeah, but I also think
the run usually ends. So I just don't think he can do it three times.
This is the mega brain right here coming out, and my brain is working at half speed right now. Acuña did tear his ACL last year. Maybe he doesn't want to unload it in the home run derby to fucking tweak his knee.
Oh, I don't think he's going to win it.
Wasn't it fan vote? Is it fan vote to like get in?
Yeah, except for Pujols, where Manfred decided to overrule everyone like a fucking dictator.
Listen to this.
Him and Miggy, are in the All-Star game.
Jesus. Cardinals fans, like, this I love going to Busch Stadium. It is one of the coolest places, like, I've been to. I think I've been to 10 MLB fields, and, like, PNC Park's up there as well with
PNC
it.
PNC is really cool.
Yeah, have you ever been to Minute Maid in Houston? I just went there, and it's –
No.
Jack rode the train.
They can hold 40,000 people in there, and it is loud in that stadium.
Yeah, I mean, because you see, like – I'm amazed at how many people they can fit in that like little like left field pod, like with the scoreboard. And then they have like the balconies like over there. But I was saying with the Cardinals fans, like some like the Albert Pujols stuff, I get it. Like awesome player, like, you know, one of the best players of all time, like spends his whole career with St. Louis. Like I get that. Like you can like, it just has me feeling like the Coach K like sort of thing too.
Oh, yeah, him and Yachty are definitely on that Coach K tour.
Oh, yeah. But then, like, even Cardinals fans, like, I was talking to one the other day, and, like, I was giving him, like, a hard time. I was talking about Tony La Russa and, like, you know, how he hasn't been, you know, what, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf at least envisioned. I don't even know what Jerry Reinsdorf envisioned. But, like, I was talking bad about La Russa, and he's like, I will not accept any Tony La Russa slander, like, at all. And I'm like, I'm like, dude, do you see what he's doing? He's like, I don't care. Like, he's one of the best. Like, he's the best man, like, the best manager of all time. I get it. You know, won a World Series, but, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, like, Tony's I tried to complain about it.
He is good.
It's, like, I think he's, like, really hurt. Like, I think Jerry, like, is even, like, hurt his legacy, too. Like, I think he, like, is tearing – like, people are going to remember Tony La Russa, obviously, you know, for, like, Cardinals World Series and, like, you know, rebuilding that franchise. But, like, this is, like – the past 2 years, couple years have like really dampened his legacy, like with everything. Like, I don't know. I don't want to get too much into it, but it just, I just got really mad. Like when he said that, when he's like, no, you can't talk bad about Tony ever. I'm like, dude, he is tearing apart.
That would,
you guys are going to be the biggest what if team ever. This Sox team is going to be the biggest.
I can't wait for the 30 ever. For 30 where they come back after Tony's dead. Yeah. That's going to be legendary. That would almost
seem like a 30 for 30. Cause you guys aren't good enough for it yet.
Maybe. I mean, dude, Tony came out of retirement and he's like the only Hall of Fame manager
79
managing right now. I mean, maybe it's worthy of a 30 for 30. It might, maybe.
And Tony is 30 for 30.
Maybe instead of the last dance, we do the last drive, and it's a picture of Tony with a bottle of Ciroc in the cup holder. That'd be bad. No, look, I agree with Sean, and I think it would almost be like if Sam knew an Angels fan, for example, and they were bad-mouthing Joe Maddon, and you were like, no fucking way, like, I will never bad-mouth Joe. It's like, dude, you can't deny that, like, A, players aren't performing. I think something a lot of Sox fans just don't want to admit. The players just aren't performing, and they want to put it on Tony. But B, it is also the manager's position to put the players like in the lineup, in the field, in the correct and like advantageous position to succeed. And that just hasn't happened. And it doesn't take a genius to have to sit there and just like criticize and be like, Joe Maddon didn't make the right bullpen decision, and that might have cost him his job because he just sucks at that. And Angels fans, who knows if they badmouth Maddon out of the door, but it's not like Cubs fans are sitting there like, don't fucking do it. Like, dude, Joe Maddon's been fired how many times in his life? Like, people get fired. Tony La Russa is not God. He got fired once before in his career, and that was by senile Hawk Harrelson. And he said he'll go to his grave with why he fired him. And I'll never understand why, but this is the other time where I think Tony should be fired. We are not winning the AL Central. I'm going to play that on repeat. Yeah, apparently we're supposed to be, and we're losing the teams in the division that actually like spent money, and we're fucking surprised. You know, it's almost asinine to like just keep running the same thing back. And Tony has just proven that there's no spark.
Ozzie, I think you guys should trade for Juan. That's what I think you should.
Somebody put out a trade package from the Sox for Juan, and it was like Eloy, Crochet,
Luis Robert.
No, we keep Robert's untouchable. And like Colas or Vera or someone, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I'd trade anything for fucking Juan Soto, like anything. I don't care. I'd give up anything except Dylan Cease, Kopech, or Robert, right, for Juan Soto. Like, yeah, any day of the week. I don't know, like, if the Sox will ever make a move like that, or Juan Soto will ever want to go to fucking Chicago. We have nothing to trade. I think that's something we need to realize. It takes an Atlanta Braves trade deadline and World Series run for the Sox team to like save face. And that's a flush that we're looking for with no cards right now.
So how hard is it to know you're like, you went the season thinking you're about to win it all, and now you guys are,
I didn't think we were going to win it all. I thought they were going to take a fucking step. I mean, they played the Astros are the AL standard, and they lost to them convincingly. And I don't know how the fuck they didn't take that and go, maybe we need some left-handed hitting because their right-handers with sliders just pieced us. Like, it literally doesn't take a genius to make that, like, realization.
And you pick 26 on the MLB draft tonight, you know,
I don't give a fuck who the fuck we pick in this draft. Like, we drafted I don't care.
It's like 5 years from now that it's going to be, like, any sort of impact. Also, I will say, though, Colson Montgomery has been – I think he's got, like, a 50 – like
only person base, worth like, a damn, and I don't know how we got that.
Well, Jedis are picking at 7 today, and we're gonna make a Chris Bryant level type of pick. So I'm pretty pumped.
You could only hope. You could only hope.
I hope you're not putting that much stock into it.
Dude, Jedi's in Jedi We Trust. I'm telling you, like, in the next year or two, we're making the playoffs again while you guys won't even be in the picture.
Huh?
And that's what's going to be, like, really tough.
That's a hot take, dude.
Dude, we literally just went on a 7-game losing streak to make sure we were in the top three for next year's draft of, like, getting a top three pick. And after that, we're rolling after this season.
You're a fucking loser. You know that? You're just a sad loser.
It's
You're
happening.
You are.
Like, I'm excited.
That's a lovable loser mentality.
I love that what we're doing right now. Lose this year. We have our whole staff in place with Rossi. All of them are staying. We're good. And we got Jed and his boys who know what they're doing better than anybody. And we got Christopher Morrell. We got a few other pieces in there.
I like Morrell.
Yeah. And dude, I mean, we got Peter Crow Armstrong, who was, we robbed the Mets out of some of their best prospects with the hobby trade. So that was wonderful. Like, we're looking good. Our minor leaguers are, you know.
Kind of wrap up MLB talk. Yeah. Do you still check in on Javi, Chris, Anthony, all of them, Schwarber? Like, do you check in regularly to see how they're doing?
Schwarbs, Rizzo, KB, yeah.
Not Javi?
Nah, like,
so
I saw him smash one, though, at against the Sox the other day, which was great to see him back Lord. In Chicago doing his business.
There is no team that Javi hates more than the White Sox. And I fucking, like, he actually hates the White Sox.
Yep, it's wonderful.
Not a fan base that hates him more either.
That is true. Now, I have to ask Sam, did Cubs fans just talk themselves into Javi when he was a Cub? And once he was gone, it was like, fuck, finally, we don't have to defend him.
Until like 2017, 2018, when he was in the MVP combo, we're like, oh, okay, we can suffer through the strikeouts because he was still semi-productive. And then 2019, 2020, we're like, okay, we're done with this.
Yeah.
We're done with this. Like, yeah, he's striking out. But, you know, everybody else, I mean, KB has been going on a tear since he's been back. He's been hitting like a ton of home runs, which I was shocked because he hit his first home run like 2 weeks ago on the season.
He's probably stoned. Probably can't feel the ball. Just coming off the bat.
He's using the elevation. It's great. It's great. And Rizzo should have been an all-star. He got robbed, but that's a whole other conversation. But also an interesting fact with this MLB draft, some of the top like 10 prospects are all like I think five of them are kids of MLB players. So you got Carl Crawford's son, Andrew Jones' son.
Wait, Carl Crawford's son?
Yeah.
Holy,
which feels really quick.
Jeez.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Dude, Carl Crawford stopped playing like 6 years ago. Yeah.
And Matt Holliday stopped playing in 2018, and his son's already in it. I literally read an article on ESPN the other day. He was the first one out of that young Rockies core, like him, Troy Tulowitzki, and all those guys to have a kid. And his kid's already going to be a pro baseball player.
This is it. I feel old.
Well, they got Andrew Jones' son's like, he's like the social media, one. Like phenom.
Yep. He's going to be insane. He's like me, the hype from everything.
So Sam, what Cubs are picking seventh. You say you want a KB pick. What? Just throw that aside. Like, do you want a high school bat? Do you want a college bat?
College
that doesn't
bat.
Have a ton of. Okay, you want a college bat. Now, lefty, righty, what are we looking?
So,
what position?
You know, I'd love to have more pitching, but the thing is we can't develop pitching, and there aren't a lot. Like, the first pitcher right now is ranked 11th in the ratings, so no chance we get pitching. But I say that now, and then tonight we'll draft a pitcher just watch. But one guy I like, and this is only if Contreras gets traded by the deadline, is Kevin Parada, who's a 20-year-old catcher. He looks really good. Another guy who I really like is Jackson Holliday, who's Matt Holliday's son, who's a shortstop. He's the number two prospect. I don't think we get him, but he looks incredible. He's a high school kid, but he looks insane. But those are like the two guys who have really,
I don't know a single name in this draft. I don't care.
I was looking at a couple White Sox stuff, and there's just like a bunch of different names.
The other one who's a shortstop, he's 21. He's out of Cali Poly. Who's someone would take happily?
They're saying one of the picks, that the only one that they mentioned twice in this article, I mean, for the Sox to take, is one of the kids from Tennessee.
Okay, I'll take anybody from Tennessee. Sure.
Really?
Dude, I mean, yeah, who? I like Tennessee baseball. Sure. I like Tennessee. Yeah. It's like, I like Tennessee baseball. I like Arkansas baseball. I like Vanderbilt baseball. I like I like either the Mississippis for baseball. I think those are baseball just like powerhouses where they'll basic, give you, yeah. They'll, yeah, basic, totally basic, totally. What else I could see? Second round, third round. I could see the Sox taking that Tennessee reliever, Matt Joyce, who throws like 105 and breaking his arm. Just him and Crochet, and they just break him.
Tennessee boys just getting broken in the White Sox system.
Their arms falling off.
Crochet has like the Sale type though, where like every time that guy throws a baseball, I wince.
Every single time
Chris Sale, I was like, dude, this guy's not gonna last. Like, how is he gonna be a starter? Now he's. I mean, obviously he's got.
Guess where he's from, Jack?
No, FGCU.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he is from. He is a
Florida guy.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But what'd you see with college baseball too? They're banning out of dugout celebrations.
Yep. That fixes the game. That fixes the game, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Fuck. Also, live update. Cam Smith is 20 under, two shots over Rory, and I'm gonna fucking scream. He shot a 64 this round. I'm gonna fucking cry.
Let's go, Cam.
Dude, this isn't his moment. This can't be his. This is looking like his moment. 150th open at St. Andrews, and Rory couldn't get it done. That's it. That's his legacy, ladies and gentlemen. Rory. That's his legacy. That's all. Have a good year.
Someone who could get it done was yesterday. Braun tore up Drew League.
Yeah, I was working. I was
42 points, 16 rebounds.
I was working during that, and I'm not gonna lie. First off, 150,000 people watching a guy record the fucking.
And I've been to Drew League before. It's like such a
recording it with his iPhone from the stands, and people's heads are in the way, and I'm watching it, and everybody's getting so stoked for LeBron, and I'm like. Are people forgetting that DeMar DeRozan's his fucking teammate? Like,
yeah, I know, but two all-stars. Like, when I went to Drew League, DeMar was hanging out there with Rudy Gay, and then they played later in the day. Like, Drew is literally from there. Like, he's there every weekend, yeah. So they can care less about DeMar. But the funny thing was, Kyrie was supposed to show up.
Did he not show up? I ended up not working.
So now people are like, is he playing today or why did he bail? And everybody's saying he was expected there. So he literally refuses to play in anything.
Even Draymond, who just played in the fucking NBA finals, was expected to play, didn't play, but still showed up and sat courtside. Yeah. Kyrie
wasn't there.
Kyrie had a manicure, pedicure he had to go take care of.
Did you guys see the guy that was guarding, like, Bleacher Report said, like,
yeah,
this guy was, like, get or, like, LeBron was giving this guy fits, and, like, the guy that was guarding him or the guy that was in the video, like, was, like, all, like, butthurt about it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. Well, when you have to guard LeBron James in a pickup game, I'd be fucking butthurt, too.
Well, my favorite thing was LeBron was complaining to the refs throughout the game on calls, and people are like, it's not just the NBA games, even in pro and pickup. So he is complaining to the refs.
So he's complaining. And then I also hear, because there's no commentary on this stream, it's straight crowd noise.
Yeah. No, but PA. In the arena, they have like a local guy who's like the in-game host, and he gives like the players nicknames and stuff. It's like total.
Some guy was in the stands screaming over the iPhone, "That's a bad call. You can't make that call, ref." I'm like, dude, this is a pickup basketball game. He wants prison rules on the court right now with LeBron. Like, he wants to call your fouls. Anything goes.
I don't think there's a more loyal group than the Bron sexuals.
Oh, totally.
God, dude. He was hitting fadeaways on fucking janitors yesterday, and they were creaming themselves. Like, what are we doing? It's a fucking pickup game with LeBron James, who hasn't played basketball in like 2-3 months. Like, he's hungry to like beat up on some janitors.
And then Michael would Skip never. Bayless was tweeting about it, and this is where Skip just gets so nitpicky, where it's just absolutely ridiculous. He's like, LeBron went two for 13 from three in a pickup game, can't even make his threes. Then it was just shitting on him for not making his 3-point shots, and I'm like, dude, he put up 42 points, 16 rebounds, 4 steals with missing 11 threes.
He had 42 points.
Yeah. 42 points, like 16 rebounds on top of that, and 4 steals.
Bro, get
and
a DeMar job.
Guy, you know, whatever.
Get a crazy. Job. What a loser. What kind of work are you getting in? What a bum. All right. Live update for the open before we finish. The fans are running onto the fairway.
to tail Rory onto the green. He's two shots back. I think Rory's got a good shot, but now they have pulled out a rope and everybody's holding them back. This looks like an apocalypse. Like, they're sprinting from the stands onto the fairway. And they're like, all right, you guys just can't come. You guys just can't come with. This is madness. There's thousands of people running on the fairways. Is this allowed at golf?
Yeah, they just have to push them back.
This is bad. This looks like it's out of hand. Oh my god, dude!
Yeah, I need to tune into that.
Yeah. Oh my god, they're piling in. All right, we got to wrap.
Holy cow!
Yeah, you see this? This looks like a zombie apocalypse. They are just filing in to see these shots. I mean, storming the fairway is a new one. Look, I'm a casual golf watcher. Do they do this for like every tournament? Running onto the fairway. I mean, like
Tiger Mania, I've seen it, but nothing.
Yeah,
else.
Not for fucking. Oh, you know what? It's Rory at St. Andrews. That's why. Yeah, guys. This is his moment. This is a legacy moment. He's gonna drain this eagle and push Cam Smith to a playoff, and I'm gonna have my bet alive. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, buckle up. Sean, thank you for coming on, talking legit everything and anything. Thank you for braving through this with a broken brain like me.
Yep.
Like always, guys, not the same time, same place. We'll see you guys later.